places that I have known, to all of the places that I have known, to all of the places that I have known, to all of the places that I have known.
Hello, this is Virata for the Welcome to Your Cross New Year's podcast. I have James here with me. Hello, James.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are drinking from the keg of glory that is a 6-0 win over the Calgary Flames in Calgary without Erik Karlsson. Why don't you give us a little bit of a preview, the mind of James as he's watching this game unfold before him.
Well, first of all, 1,000 years, 6-0 victories on the road. That's let's get that out of the way. Now, I don't really buy the hype that, like, Calgary is supposedly really, like, on the way up after getting, I believe they were swept by the Ducks last year. Is that correct? In the first round?
That sounds right to me. I don't know, but I want it to be true.
And like Ottawa got to the Eastern Conference Finals and like are like a lock to miss the playoffs. So I'm going into that game thinking, you know, it's going to be a tough game. You know, you hear about the deep defensive core that they have, potentially the deepest in the entire league, they kept saying.
Right, yeah.
But the big things were, I don't know if you heard of this guy, Jagomir Jagr was in town for the first time.
Fresh young talent, freshly developed in the AHL, being given his first big break at age of 46.
Speaking of fresh, he apparently looked like a freshly laid dog turd in his first game. I watched a supercut of his defensive zone play that was really bad. I thought, okay, Jagr's had a bad game, so he is going to play extremely well this game against Ottawa. And Curtis Lazar is playing on the top line, so I'm not saying that Calgary's going to win, but Curtis Lazar is definitely going to have 2 goals and an assist, and those will be the only 3 points that he gets the entire year. Fate.
I feel like Calgary is just like they're in that sweet spot for hockey writers and critics who they've done a lot of things that on paper look really smart. They developed really intentionally. You know, they draft guys like Sean Monahan, they draft smartly, they get Johnny Gaudreau. You know, they've got depth throughout the lineup. Kind of weird to me that Matt Stajan's still on this team. Like, I think we forget sometimes that he was traded there 150 years ago.
They traded for Alex Chiasson. Go on.
Yeah, yeah, really smart. They saw him play and thought, like, we need him in a Flames jersey. You know, I think everyone loves a good pantsing, and the fact that Boston gave them Dougie Hamilton for, you know, some draft picks and then promptly spent those draft picks on, like, sick livestock or something. You know, just seemed like everyone wants Calgary to succeed because they've made these moves that are just that we're always hoping GMs are going to make. They're going to fleece one another. They're going to draft smart. But when you look at their forward core, you know, they do have some like good young talent like Makhachuk and, you know, Gonny Jockey, who is like 160 pounds, is still obviously pretty awesome at age 24. He's making almost $7 million a year. So.
Are you fucking serious? He makes that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's they signed him.
I had no idea that was.
They signed him long term. He's like really talented. Obviously, I don't know if you know, Ryan Getzlaff is going to catch him in the chin with an elbow one day, and like suddenly Calgary. I hope they insured that deal. That's all I want to say.
They got Sean Monahan, former Ottawa Soissons set,
who's also making $6.4 million. So,
God bless.
Yeah, you know, big congratulations to Sean Monahan, hometown boy. But you know, I feel like we went into this really just privileging the hell out of Calgary's moves. Mike Smith's their starting goaltender. You know, like
world's best shitty goalie. I said it in, I believe, episode one.
He's still really tall. He's 35, man. Like he's
what?
Yeah, they traded a first round pick for him, by the way.
Man, Phoenix is just existing in a different timeline. Like, when did Mike Smith turn 35?
I know.
I would have thought that guy was like 26 years old.
I remember when Mike Smith was challenging Marty Turco for the starting job in Dallas, and they were like, "Oh, this young kid, we got to give him a chance. You know, he's big, he's really athletic, he's playing really well." And then I think he went to like Tampa, and then he went to Phoenix. I have no idea, but you know, he's still getting first round picks for some reason. Eddie Lack, who was terrible in Vancouver and ends up in Calgary, which is kind of like a Martin Gerber to Toronto Maple Leafs type of move right there, like in division.
Analogy.
And then, you know, really that defense does look pretty great on paper, sure, like, trading for Hamonic. He's kind of like a perfect middle pairing defenseman. But, you know, I'm not saying that there's nothing there, but I totally agree with you. This idea that Ottawa was just going to go in and get destroyed, and it was a certain thing without Carlson. I feel like there's a little bit of like fantasy novel thing going on here. Like they did all the things that we're constantly saying that GM should do. So,
yeah.
You know, how can we not?
They're kind of like the Carolina Hurricanes, where they're like a hockey writer's team. Like these guys are doing all the things I've been saying that GM should do. So therefore they're good. And you're like, this sport is incredibly weird to the point that I will not bet money on it. That's how weird it is.
Last night was a microcosm of what makes hockey weird. Like Ottawa, I think, was pretty solidly outplayed, at least in the first half of the first period. Anderson was amazing.
You didn't like Borowiecki's play where he put Curtis Lazar head first into the boards, blew his assignment, created a scoring chance the other way, and then got the living shit kicked out of the plane. That was a good sequence.
Can you imagine all of that happening on one shift and then getting on the bench and being like, put me back out there, coach?
No, he got rocked in the chin so hard early in that fight, and then he took like two more in the head, and he skated back to the bench like nothing happened. Man, that guy's skull has to be 4 inches thick.
I was thinking about, there's that video that circulated of Boro starting a fight right as the Sens were breaking into the offensive zone.
And I was fucking at that game! That was the most annoying! I know exactly what you're talking about. Mike Hoffman was so fucking mad. I think he like cracked his stick on the ice, but then kind of did the like polite stick tap after the fight.
Yeah, yeah. It was like MacArthur, Turris, and Hoffman on a 3-on-2, and Boro starts a fight in his own zone to break up the play. But on that fight where he got destroyed last night, it was at least with Calgary entering the Ottawa zone. So, like, you know, if he's going to engage in something stupid that doesn't contribute anything to the team, at least he broke up a Calgary play. But
another interesting point about the game was that our power play is also good now. Three power play goals, basically, in that game.
Which I think we have to talk about how special Hoffman's shooting is. Like, that's crazy that, like, he'll get dropped down to the fourth line and insulated with, you know, our defensive, you know, our so-called defensive two-way players who completely understand the system. You know, Boucher puts him on a line with, you know, his favorite system players like Pyatt and Thompson. And
is
then,
that true? When did that
well,
happen?
This was last, in-game? This I think it was last game. He was dropped down to the third or fourth line. Yeah. He had like really low ice time against Vancouver.
Well, and he was sick. He's been sick.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah. I just thought it
he
was a continuation
like in that game.
I thought it was like a continuation of like the Dave Cameron, like we can't trust this guy type
no,
thing.
No, I think that Boucher is a little more aware that the guy that could cave the crossbar in if he hits it is good. And that's reflected in the ice time and the power play time that he gets.
When I watch Hoffman play, it reminds me of, like, if you're playing against somebody, you're playing like Street Fighter 2 or something against somebody who's just like really good at executing the dragon punch, and they've got this one thing, and you just like, you never learn how to defend against it. And I keep seeing Hoffman getting put out there, like in his same spot by the hash marks, you know, taking one timers. And I'm like, at some point, someone's going to watch some video that's going to figure this out, right? And then you watch the replay over and over again, and you just, I don't know how you defend against someone who shoots that accurately and that fast.
I'm not like, comparing the players, but it's kind of like the Ovechkin thing where it's like, yeah, Ovechkin at the dot. Like, that's basically his entire game, and he has like 9 goals in 5 games or something this season. Like, he's 32 years old or something. Like, you still can't stop Ovechkin from scoring from the exact same place every time.
I really wish that hockey had, like baseball has with pitching, a little like speed clock in the bottom right hand corner.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
That measures the speed of shots on net. You know, just measure the ones that, I know those pucks flying everywhere. I don't really care about the ones that go up in the netting, but you know, I would love to see after a goal like that, they automatically go to the shot clock.
Well, even that shot, like the sound that the crossbar made was unbelievable, and made me think about how he had something like 4 posts in that frustrating game against Detroit.
Uh-huh.
If Mike Hoffman shoots 1/4 inch to the left or right, it's like he has like a 4-goal night, you know, like, but that's his whole thing is, you know, if he gets it where he wants, the goaltender has 0 fucking chance of stopping that puck.
One of my favorite things is the sound that Hoffman's shot makes when it goes in, and then the like stunned silence of the arena crowd in playing an away game. Like, it's not just total silence. It's like a,
it's okay. Deflation, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. As opposed to that kind of like garbagey goal where there's a scramble in front of the net and then you just see the light go on and you're like, okay, I guess that's true.
What I want to talk about is how I'm really happy that the Sens started scoring power play goals on a team that was clearly deflated coming off a road trip last night. I still, I grew up playing hockey. I've been watching it my whole life. I do not understand the strategy of the power play. Like, it's Guy Boucher's second year as coach. I'm like, I think they get it down low, and if it misses, it goes behind the net, and then everyone's swarming on Bobby Ryan, but he has the hands to kind of get it through traffic, so maybe he's drawing everyone toward him, and then they get it back to the point from there. Like, it's and then there seems to be some deflection wizardry going on. Like, they're really counting on deflections. It's breaking my brain. Like, the way the players set up on the power play is breaking my fucking brain.
Yeah, I think when Boucher first came in, you could see them using a traditional sort of like five-man box setup.
Yeah,
you had 2 guys on the back. And then as the power play was just brutal through, you know, all of last year, you saw them getting like some improv jazz combinations out there. Of not just lineup, like not just using the same setup, but with different players. But you saw them with like really trying to get more net front presence, like having all kind, like suddenly like Dion Phaneuf is standing in front of the net, and you know, they set up at first the unit power play was all about getting Hoffman that shot, just like in Washington, it's all about getting to Ovechkin at the dot, like you were saying. And then I noticed last night, everything's just clicking, everything's going Ottawa's way. But you could tell Ottawa was sort of feeling itself there at the end, because you had power plays where it's just Shabbat at the point.
Yeah.
There's nobody else back there. They're trusting their like upcoming offensive defensemen basically quarterback the power play. I mean, when else are you going to do it? You're up 5-0, but
I think Turris kind of quarterbacks it, and he defers to Shabbat when he doesn't have an option. Like, he's kind of halfway down on the left side, and I noticed that Shabbat waits and waits and waits to be given the puck, whereas Carlson, when he's on the power play, is even Phaneuf kind of is on the power play. He's like, well, I will decide what happens from that year, kind of thing.
So what are your thoughts on Sens are 2-0-2 so far? Mm. How are you feeling so far? You know, for context for those listening, Ottawa hasn't played Edmonton yet. We're a few hours away or a couple hours away from game time against Edmonton.
2 a.m.'s just around the corner.
We're going to drop this podcast, as is customary, at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night. How are you feeling so far about this young season?
You can't feel bad about taking 4 of 6 points without your best player on an early Western road trip. I went to that Capitals game, and I've said it before, you know, I'm very thankful that the team has 1 year under their belt with an extremely disciplined style coaching system. You know, like, if you're going to play without Carlson, might as well be the team that blocks like 18 shots a game and, you know, like, is pretty egoless and doesn't play very open, but yet still has some scoring power, you know? So I think they're weathering the storm. I mean, in our first episode, I think I called for just go 500 till Carlson's back and I'm happy. So, you know, no regulation losses, I'll take it. I mean, I thought the Capitals game, if they had Carlson on that power play, especially in overtime, they probably would win that game. The Detroit game was super frustrating. Again, Hoffman 4 posts, like, that's kind of, you got to like let that one go. Beat Vancouver, got to beat that tomato can team. Nice to see them finally win an OT game. Incredibly happy with last night's performance. So, yeah, so that kind of leaves it open to, let's see what happens against a very well-rested, angry Oilers team. We got Mike Condon in net. Oduya's back from injury. Who knows what kind of shape he's in? Yeah, I'm good with it. I heard Carlson's back next week.
I'm looking at some of the team stats, and I know it's only 4 games in, but you know, Ottawa's top 10 in the league in shots for right now. You know, they're not as great in shots against, but they're
they've outshot their opponent in every game or something, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they've outshot them in every game. Shots against, they're doing pretty well in shots against as well.
I think in the loss to Detroit, they had like 40 shots or something.
Yeah, they're right up there with like, they're allowing just under 28 shots a game. They're taking 35 shots a game, which is crazy for them. You know, last year they were not, their shot differential was pretty bad. So, you know, if you're a person who's analytically minded, I suppose, who entered into the season looking at their possession stats and saying, well, they're losing Carlson, who's their best possession player, so obviously they're going to be bad. You'd probably be pretty comforted when you look at this and see that even though their possession stats haven't been great, their shot differential is pretty good. I don't know how much of that is skewed by the fact that, like you said, Calgary took like 12 penalties last night or something, but I'm making that up, but they took a lot.
I don't think that's inaccurate. Like, it, I think in like one period they had like six penalties.
So I'm feeling the same. You know, it's super weird to start the season with three shootouts in a row. You know, some of those games, Ottawa, I'm going to say, I think for a couple of those games, Ottawa didn't really have any business taking a point, but that's why you lock down your extremely good goaltender when you get a chance.
Yeah,
I'm extremely happy and grateful about the fact that back when Ottawa had Bishop and Leonard and Anderson, and everyone was like, trade Anderson, he's the older one, and we'll just run with these two young guys. I'm extremely grateful that we, you know, as usual, management didn't read anything on Twitter.
I just want to be clear. Is Robin Leonard the goaltender who has not won a game this year? Or is he the goaltender who has no winning seasons in his entire career?
I think it's possible to double dip on that.
I looked up Robin Leonard the other day on HockeyDB. Shout out. Official DB of the WTYKY podcast, by the way. He's in a contract year. I think he has a show me contract, like 1 year deal or something. Could be wrong.
They signed him to, here, I'll take a look. They recently re-signed him with lots of, this will be recognizable to Sens fans, like lots of encouraging words about like, he's definitely our number one. We have total faith in him. You know, the idea that, you know, we're not concerned about Robin Leonard at all. No, you're right. They signed him to a 1 year deal.
Yeah, I saw a headline that was like, Leonard in show me year for the Sabres. And I'm like, wow, when you're on a show me contract on a rebuilding team, like that's kind of, that's rough stuff. And then I looked up his numbers and like, yeah, four games, no wins. I think he has one overtime loss. And I think he got pulled from a game. Rough stuff, Jack. And even like he's put up good numbers for the Sabres, but I just think they're not good enough a team that like the goalie's just going to save them.
Well, I mean, now that Tim Murray's gone, his, you know, the Tim Murray was around when Leonard was drafted in Ottawa. Tim Murray trades for him, clearly in Robin Leonard's corner on this one. And now that he's gone,
yeah,
you know, I think that this new, I'm not going to pretend like I know who the GM of Buffalo is, but like whoever is running the shop down there, I you got to see like.
They're like 1 year ahead of Toronto in the like deliberate rebuild phase, and they've already fired their new coach and their new GM.
I can't believe that they let their franchise player, who's 20 years old, dictate not just who the coach is, but who the GM is. Like, that's wild to me. And then not only that, so he's 20 years old. I mean, Jack Eichel's good, don't get me wrong. I like him a lot. But, like, he just negotiated a new contract, right? 8 years at $10 million a year. So, like...
Woo! Thanks for fucking up the Carlson contract, my guy.
So, I mean, if you're the owner, you know, whatever Republican shithead owns Buffalo, what's his name? Pegula.
Robin Leonard, yes.
Yeah. and you are like, okay, I have an upcoming contract negotiation with this guy. I'm absolutely going to take his advice and fire the entire strata of management that insulates me from him for an upcoming contract negotiation. And then you give him $80 million. That's fucking bananas to me. I really thought, like, if I was a Sabres fan, which, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. But like, if I was a Sabres fan who's looking at that, I'd be like, well, for the next 8 years, basically, like, I hope this kid has good hockey instinct, because like, all of our eggs are in that basket now.
Oh no, this thing looks like it could go real wrong. Well, what do you say we do a little housekeeping and give a shout out to one of our sponsors before we move on?
Please proceed.
Okay. Well, this podcast is a presentation of Scientology. Listeners, is your soul plagued by body thetans from prehistoric events? Do you have suppressive persons or SPs in your life offering you nothing but potential trouble sources or PTS? Well, the Church of Scientology is here to help with this special offer. Subscribe to the church today by signing over your operating thetan or soul to a Sea Org service contract at a special introductory term of 1 billion years. That's right. You'll travel the world via international waters, perform unpaid labor, and receive absolutely free a copy of Dianetics by L. Ron Hubbard, Lord Xenu, bless him and keep him. Now, this isn't some gimmick or tax evasion scam. This is the real deal. Virata and I are both militant Scientologists and can attest to its suppression-shattering results. Virata, you're at what state now? OT5 or like OT6?
Thank you for noticing. That's very polite of you.
And that only costs like $60,000, $70,000 to achieve. So
U.S.
It pays for itself after OT4, I think. Mm-hmm. So don't delay. Visit Scientology.org/WTYKY today and enter the promo code VIRATA to receive your free meter and audit and begin the path to going clear today. Back to the show.
So we should talk about this tourist contract situation.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, I want to ask you, in your mind, has tourist elevated himself to that like upper echelon of core Sens players that were he to leave, you would be upset in the way that a person is upset when like a good friend moves away?
This is a great question, because I actually thought about this the other day. And I realized Kyle Turris is my Martin Havlat. Like, people talk about Martin Havlat in this everlasting love kind of way. Mm-hmm. And like, I will always love Kyle Turris. We talked about last night's game, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hoffman had the crazy power play goal. CeCe had the nice goal. Anderson gets a shutout. Stone had a nice one. You know, and so on and so on. Kyle Turris had 3 assists in that game.
Yeah. Like,
more people are talking about Shabbat's pass to Hoffman. And, you know, it was a great pass. It's like, Kyle Turris had 3 points in that game. And, like, no one's talking about it. And not because anyone's, like, against Kyle Turris, but it's just the kind of player he is. Like, oh, is Kyle Turris a number one center, though? It's like, well, he's been the number one center on this team for a few years and done a very good job of it.
Yeah, I do think he's underappreciated. Turris has had like multiple career defining OT goals at this point.
That's going to be my next point, that like Kyle Turris has more memorable playoff moments than Jason Spezza, who was on the team for like a decade. Mm-hmm. And a team that made the playoffs a lot. Like, Turris has 2 massive OT goals in the last few years.
I think I've probably watched that like freezing Henrik Lundqvist with a shot over the shoulder OT goal at least as many times as the like Spezza on Soure inside outside move.
Yeah, which is like, I have no idea what the significance of that game was.
But oh, like, I think it was just like a regular season, couldn't matter less type of game. But yeah, I think Turris is underappreciated in terms of like he really is like one of those like swizzle sticks that stirs the drink type of thing.
Oh yeah.
He's underrated playmaker. I think he makes a lot of the players around him better. It's really hard to reconcile the experience of watching Turris with like just looking at his numbers.
Sure.
Like I understand why someone who's like, I don't know, a hockey writer who doesn't watch Sens games being like, yeah, Turris is like looking at his numbers. He seems like a perfectly serviceable second line center.
Yeah, he's a 1B kind of guy.
And I'm really like not one of those people who's like, oh, you know, the numbers are lying and you just look at the player and their quality is evident or something. But I really am just, I don't have a solution. I'm just leaving it at when you watch the Sens night in and night out, it's really hard to imagine them without Turris driving the play.
For me, the Kyle Turris eye test is, as a fan who watches a lot of Sens games, have you ever seen Kyle Turris get the puck in the defensive zone and think, oh no, Kyle Turris has the puck? And like, he is a very competent player, which is, you know, kind of, it's not sexy, but he's so trustworthy. For a guy who came into town with the, you know, supposed reputation of being a brat, a dude seems like a coach's dream.
Mm-hmm. This is a story that if you have to write about this team day in and day out,
sure,
and one of the most important players on the team doesn't have a contract yet, or it doesn't just like come out like effortlessly,
yeah,
I can totally understand why you write that story about like how far apart are they, how important is he really, what could they get in return. It just generates like a solid half a dozen articles for you if you have to write about this team every day.
Yep.
But from what it sounds like, they're not that far apart on money. It's just a matter of term. And if the difference is between 5 years and 8 years, I mean, that's not nothing. But that's also not like, you know, Ottawa's offering him a 2-year deal and he wants 8. Like, it feels like if this team comes out with, you know, a 6-year or 7-year deal, and he gives up a little bit of money in return or something, you know, like it definitely feels like they're within striking distance.
Well, that's a thing. That's the big question on my mind. Like, you know, full disclosure, I own a Kyle Turris jersey. Like I love him as a player. But I hear stuff like the Turris camp wants 8 years. And even I'm kind of like, I don't know. To sign him till he's like 36. Years is a tough number for anyone, but also anyone not named Erik Karlsson, who has had two crazy injuries already in his career. And I'm just like, I'd give him 10 years if I could, you know? Whereas even Turris, I'm kind of like, well, is he the odd man out? You know, where as much is made about the Sens being a budget team, they're not as far away from the cap as you'd think. You know, like, what are they at this point? 5 million out of the cap? Do you want to look it up?
Less than that. They've got...
Less than that?
Yeah, they've got 2.7.
Wow. So, you know, just under half. And you think, well, you got... As much as Sens fans don't want to believe this, is that there are some pretty good players on this team. You know, you have Stone, you have Hoffman, you have Brassard, and you got some good kids coming up. Do you really want to commit long-term to Turris at center when you have Brassard, who's kind of an equivalent, and the prospect depth is currently at center with White and Brown?
Mm-hmm.
And even Pajot can, like, do spot duty on second-line center. So I just feel like this is an unfortunate predicament where if they can spare... I understand that centers are really hard to come by, but I think they've kind of come by a couple of good ones, hopefully. And they really want to keep Mark Stone. They made him assistant captain this year. So to me, that's a bit of a signal that, you know, they're trying to show him you know, this is your home.
Mm-hmm.
An RFA, which I'm sure they love. I just think that tourists might be the odd man out here.
Yeah, I do think that, and I've seen this said by a friend of the podcast, Luke Peristi, saying, you know, he'd take stone every time if you had a choice between, you had to choose between tourists and stone. And he made the point that Stone's a pretty special player, and I get that. He's a younger player as well. Like you said, he's an RFA. You know, one of the best, and I think super underappreciated two-way players on the in the league, really. If you look at the rate of his takeaways in every game, like he really is something special. One thing that I try to keep in mind, though, and I wonder if the team is keeping this in mind too. I'm sure they are, but there were pretty new rules in terms of how long you can sign players to. Like there's limits on how long you can sign players. So if the player is already on your roster, you can re-sign him to 8 years. But if you're signing him as a UFA, you can only sign him to 7 years. Huh. And that's like, I don't know if we really appreciate how big of a concession that is for players. You know, a lot of them were signing like 12-year deals, like just really wacky deals that were like, you know, this team has no intention of paying this player for the last like 4 years of his deal. Like those long tail contracts were only there to bring down the cap hit. Yeah. You have like Zetterberg coming out and being like, oh yeah, I have no intention of playing the last few years of my deal. Like just not even trying to hide it anymore. So if you're a guy like Turris, who is 28 years old, who's an impending UFA, you know, this was your chance to get a really wacky contract offer from a desperate team. This was your chance to like go to like a Florida or whoever who might offer you like 11 years. And get paid. Either way, if he signs, let's say he even signs 8 years in Ottawa, at 36, it's going to be really tough for him at 36 to find another contract unless he's playing at an unreasonably high level. So this might be the last contract of his career. If he goes to UFA, he can only sign for a maximum of 7 years, which means his next contract is 35. That's like, you know, he could foreseeably play till he's 40 if he gets a big ridiculous stupid contract. So like part of me wonders if it might actually be in his best interest to sign a 4 or 5 year deal, because once that deal is up he'll only be 32 or 33, and he might be more likely to get another like 4 year deal from, like, you know, it seems to me like a Philadelphia is always going out and offering like 5 year deals to people. Like if they're signing like Le Cavalier for like multi-year deals when his career is practically over, then like I could see a young centerman who's a very good second line center option on a deep team going, you know, getting at least 4 or 5 years from like, I don't know, Tampa Bay or someone.
Yeah. The way he plays the game, I don't picture a few years out of retirement Kyle Turris being a bad signing. You know, I've spoken about how great he is, a player so well-rounded, seems like a good team guy, doesn't get injured very much. Like that's why I think he'll play till a pretty decent age. There was a telling moment in that game against Vancouver where Turris goes in, underrated shootout guy, by the way.
Oh yeah.
And scores a nice goal. Way to go. And then Stone was up and he comes in on an angle, if I remember correctly, opens his blade completely, eyes up the whole time, flips the puck back and like goes low blocker out of nowhere, like some wrist wizardry shit. I'm just like, I feel like Kyle Turris is a special player, but Mark Stone is the like true unicorn player that you need to like. I don't even know how that shootout shot worked, and it just looked like he kind of tapped at it. Like Mark Stone makes hockey look easy. Like I find all of his goals look like he's taking a warm-up shot practically. Kyle Turris, I understand what makes him a good player, and Mark Stone, I kind of don't understand how he like what makes him a good player. He's way past me in believe it or not, professional hockey player Mark Stone knows more about the game than me. But speaking of protecting special players, the other thing with Turris is I am 100% on board with Operation Re-sign Erik Karlsson at all costs. You know, I will jettison good players and hope for the best with prospects just to keep him for the rest of his career or whatever.
So in that spirit, let me give you a scenario, because I think that Turris has kind of got the team over a barrel here.
Yeah.
So let's say they go into next year not able to re-sign Turris. They trade him or whatever, or he makes it to free agency. And let's say they don't trade for a player like Duchesne, who's going to be making more than what Turris would be making.
Yeah.
Right? So they go into next season without Turris and without a replacement for Turris, knowing that they have, you know, they might go out and get somebody, but like it's hard to find a replacement top line center somewhere for cheaper than it is to re-sign your current top line center.
Well, so, I'll let you cook, but I have stuff to say.
Okay. So knowing that they have center depth in terms of prospects, there's a possibility that they go into next season with Derek Brassard as their top line center.
Yeah.
Like, not the end of the world. I don't know if he's like the best top line center in the world, but we're saying the same thing about Turris. Like, I like Brassard a lot. And then you've got Zach Smith, Pageau, you know, Thompson and Pyatt as guys who are better suited to be third and fourth line centers. And then you've got Brown and White as very good prospects, but unproven at this point. And that would be the last year of Carlson's deal. So you'd be entering into a season with Carlson with only 1 year left on a year when Ottawa doesn't really have the center depth to compete that well. So part of me thinks, like, if the strategy is to re-sign Carlson at all costs, which I think it should be.
And I think it is.
Yeah. Like, if the team has to trade, like, Pageau to make room for Carlson, they're going to do it. If the team has to trade Zach Smith for and, like, keep some salary and, like, take back nothing in return to make room for Carlson, they're absolutely going to do that. And that's not the end of the world. It would be bad, but it wouldn't be the end of the world. You know, like, maybe they find somebody to take, like, you know, a bigger contract off their hands. I don't know if there's any interest. Like, Dion Phaneuf's, like, cap hit is pretty high, but his salary starts going down next year.
Yeah.
You know, I could see someone being like, yeah, you know, I'd take Dion Phaneuf for, like, 6.5 then 5.5 or something.
Las Vegas Golden Knights. What's
that? Yeah. So I do think that Turris has kind of got Ottawa over a barrel here to be like,
yeah,
you don't have a center who's ready to step in and be your second line / first line center. You're not going to get one on the free agent market unless you trade for Duchesne, who's going to cost more than him anyways, more than Turris anyways. You're going to go into the next season with pretty paltry center depth. And then what kind of message does that send to Carlson in terms of like your willingness to pay for him or to give him a team that can compete?
Well, here's what I have to say. Now, this is going to get Coke dreams, so strap in. I could eat my hat on this, but I do believe if you gave him the chance, Jean-Gabriel Pageau could play second line center. I think he's kind of like a third line center that's like could punch above, or he plays third line center, but he could punch above his weight and hold it down if you had to make, say, Colin White the third line center or Zach Smith or something. I really believe that. So I can't really back that up with anything except other than he did get second line center time in the 2015 season and scored like 19 goals. Like, I thought he looked totally fine as a second line center. So it's, I don't think it's as fucked as it could be without Turris, although we definitely lose like an awesome player, but it's just, it's friggin' sports, man. You can't keep all of your good players all the time, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, Turris has missed some games with health issues in the past, and they've gone into the season with, or they've gone into those games with Zach Smith as a second line center, Pajot as a second line center. And, you know, I think you're right that they've held up. It'd be interesting to see like Pajot playing second line center minutes for like 40 games, 40 plus games. Yeah, I think ultimately they're going to find common ground with Turris. You know, I think those, if it comes down to like the difference between 5 years and 6 years, you know, I think this gets done. If Turris is not moving off of 8 years, which honestly I wouldn't blame him for, because, you know, it's pretty hard in the NHL to find a contract at 35,
yeah,
or 34. Then yeah,
or I'm 45. Not... You know, sometimes you have to sit out training camp, man. get that Millie.
So anyways, yeah, I feel like Turris is probably just looking at it and going, you know, what's it going to be like to be trying to find another contract at 34, and wishing I had really just held out for that extra year.
You know, if he goes out and, you know, signs to St. Louis or something, which is a team I have no idea if they're good anymore for 8 years, like, I would never be mad at that. But I think it's no secret that, like, the Sens have been using their first round picks for centermen for like 3-4 years now, and might platoon the center position for better or for worse to re-sign Carlson. But, you know, your question about what message that sends to Carlson is a good one. And, you know, we'll just have to see how it goes. So this is what is called analysis. We'll see how it goes. I did have one last thing to say, is that collusion with the Russian campaign is a big nothing burger. You know, I saw that Paul Manafort got paid $60 million from a Russian mobster during the election, so there's nothing to see here.
Coincidence.
Okay, so let's all just relax and protect those coal mining jobs.